For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
And thank you all for tuning in, and welcome back to another episode of the Mystery Frequency, home of the Graveyard Shift. I do hope you enjoy the shows we have lined up on this episode, and if you enjoy this format, please let me know through the comments on Spotify, my email at mysteryfrequencypodcast@gmail.com, and my social media. All those links can be found in the description. And as always, please don't forget to follow, review, leave a 5-star rating, and to share the podcast. And a big thank you to all those who already have. Now, with all that, please enjoy the show.
Adventures by Morse. Carlton E. Morse presents... The City of the Dead, featuring Captain Friday.
If you like high adventure, come with me. If you like the stealth of intrigue, come with me. If you like blood and thunder... come with me.
But first, listen to a word from our sponsor. The City of the Dead. There are 10,000 citizens in the City of the Dead, each with a white marble slab indicating each residence. The gates of the City of the Dead have long been closed to newcomers. It is a city whose population has remained unchanged for the last 10 years. And the mayor of this city is Joshua Friday. Some call him caretaker of the old cemetery in the valley. But anyone who knows Joshua Friday at all calls him mayor. He is the only living person in the City of the Dead. That is, unless you care to include Lammy Fink, a slow-witted fellow who does kitchen police duty and a little gardening in the city during the day and retires beyond its precincts at night. The City of the Dead lies in a tiny valley 25 miles from the suburb of a great city. It is off the main highway and completely isolated from the world. But now it's 9 o'clock on a moonlit, windy night in October.
Come on. Come on, get out of that car. You heard me.
What do you want?
You want me to plug you?
Oh, Jimmy, do what he says.
You too, girl. Get out.
You let go of me.
You let that girl alone.
And get out of the car, both of you. Yeah. Now start walking. No. The other way.
But that's toward the graveyard.
You heard me. And don't look back or they'll pick up your bodies in the morgue wagon in the morning. Now get moving.
Jimmy, what's happening to us?
Keep walking. Don't look around.
They've stolen your machine.
I know it, Phyllis. I couldn't tackle two armed men.
Well, of course you couldn't.
Shouldn't have parked way out here in the country.
But it was nice. It was so still in the moonlight. Who do you suppose they were?
Probably car thieves. They didn't touch us.
Jimmy. Listen.
Church bell.
Oh, there aren't any churches around here.
Oh, sure there is. That little old church down at the other end of the valley.
Oh, but that's all falling to pieces. It hasn't been used for years.
That's right. Funny, isn't it?
Jimmy, I'm scared. Do we have to go on?
Well, look, Phyllis. There's a light ahead of us. You know what it is?
No. Oh, Jimmy, what's that?
Quick, get off the road. Behind those bushes. Get down.
Oh, Jimmy. Jimmy, what was that? What was...
Shh.
Oh, I wish we were home.
Don't talk so loud, Phyllis. That fellow acted as though he were being chased.
Chased?
Listen. Don't hear anything, do you?
No.
I mean, come on. Keep on the grass.
Where are we going?
You saw that light. I just remembered that the caretaker of the City of the Dead lives around here somewhere. That must be his place.
Oh, I don't like that name.
What? City of the Dead?
Yes. The graveyard's bad enough.
Well, anyway, we'll get him to let us use his phone and call the police and have a car sent out for us. Well, there, you can see the outline of the house among the trees. See it?
Uh-huh. Looks awfully lonesome, doesn't it?
Mm.
Look. What are those?
We're inside the City of the Dead. Those are the tombstones glistening in the moonlight.
I don't like it, Jimmy.
Oh, here's the door.
Oh, Jimmy, don't leave me.
I'm right here in the shadow.
He doesn't answer.
It's funny.
What do you want?
Oh, no!
Hey, where did you come from?
What do you want?
Are you the caretaker?
Supposing I am.
Oh, what made you sneak up on us from behind?
That you making that crazy noise.
What noise? Oh, you mean the man crying?
Oh, so twas you.
Oh, no. No, it wasn't. He passed us down the road. He was scared.
What are you doing here?
Why, our car was stolen from us.
Oh, stolen? Hi, Doc. Open the door.
Yes. Two men held us up. We want to phone to the city for help.
Do you hear, Doc?
They're coming, Mayor. Oh, here you are. Well, what have you there, Mayor?
Go on in, you two.
Yes, sir.
Lock up again, will you, Doc?
Sure. Were they the ones picking up the rumpus?
Tell a queer story. Here, you two, sit down. Said the car was stolen, Doc. Who stole it?
Well, I don't know. Just two gunmen.
Yeah.
Now here, Mayor, you better let me do the questioning. We'll get further.
Go ahead.
What's your name, son?
James Parker, sir, and this is Miss Phyllis Carroll.
How do you do, Miss Carroll? Now, Mr. Parker, as I understand, you and Miss Carroll were out riding this evening.
Uh-huh. We were parked on the road near your house.
Parked? What for?
No, Mayor.
Well, it looks suspicious to me, Doc, with all these other goings on.
No, you just don't understand modern young folk, Mayor. You'd better let me do the talking. Now then, you were parked on the edge of the road, I take it?
Yes, sir.
And then what happened?
Well, two men suddenly appeared, one on each side of the car, and told us to put up our hands and get out of the car.
They were armed, you say?
Yeah, both of them. When we got out, they told us to keep walking in the direction of the graveyard.
What's that?
Oh, son, don't ever say that word again in front of the Mayor Friday. This is the City of the Dead.
Oh, yes, sir. Sorry.
Yeah, go on.
Well, just as we saw the light in the caretaker's...
There's Mayor, son. Mayor.
Yes, sir. Just as we saw the light in the Mayor's house, we heard someone coming down the road as hard as he could run. He was scared.
Hysterical, huh?
Yes, sir, he was. Crying and sobbing.
Oh, Jimmy, you forgot about the bell.
Bell?
Yes, the church bell. It seemed to come from down at the other end of the City of the Dead.
I guess it was from the old church down there.
You hear that, Mayor?
There ain't been no bell in them ruins for 10 years, Doc.
No bell? But we heard it.
But I tell
you... Never mind, Mayor. Now then, son, what happened after that?
Well, after the man ran by, we waited a few moments, and we came to the door and knocked. That's all.
Oh, I see. What do you make of it, Mayor?
Don't like it. Think they're lying.
But we're not. Listen, let me call up the police.
Police?
The police? Listen, I'm mayor of the City of the Dead, and what I say goes.
Yes, sir.
And I ain't never had any police in this city, and I ain't never gonna have.
And besides, there isn't any telephone here.
But I saw a telephone wire.
Son, you heard me say there was no telephone here.
Well, but I've got to let my mother know.
I'm sorry, Miss Carroll. It seems to be fate.
But what are we going to do? No one ever comes by this way.
Well, Mayor Friday will put you up for the night, I think. He has a couple of extra rooms, eh, Mayor?
Oh, sure. Sure.
Oh, but I've got to get home tonight.
Now, Miss Carroll, you better just take it all as an adventure and make the best of it. Isn't that right, son?
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe if we started to walk back, we could pick up a ride when we hit the main highway.
No. We couldn't think of letting you do that. You simply must accept Mayor Friday's hospitality. Now, I'll tell you what. While the mayor is fixing up your rooms, I'll brew us a cup of coffee.
But I don't want any coffee.
Oh, tut, of course you do. Yeah, there's still a fire in the kitchen stove. And the kettle's almost to a boil. We'll have coffee in a jiffy.
But I want to go home.
Don't say any more, Phyllis.
Jimmy, what does it mean?
I don't know. Something's up. I don't get it, but we better play up to him. Pretend like you thought nothing was the matter.
Well, are we prisoners?
Looks like it. Now, don't worry, though. I can take on these two old duffers if I have to.
Well, but who is this doc person?
Oh, here he comes.
Now then, coffee's all ready. Hey, there you are, Miss Carroll.
Thank you.
Yeah, and there you are, Mr. Parker.
Oh, thank you, sir.
And here's some buns. Better if they're hot, but they'll do for this sort of a snack.
No, thank you. I'll just have coffee.
Sir, I thought that Mr. Mayor Friday lived here alone.
And you wonder who I am, eh? Well, I'm what your city doctors would call an old codger, I'm afraid. Just an old country doctor. Doc Tuner is what they call me.
But I wouldn't think they'd need a physician in the city of the dead.
No, the city of the dead isn't my seat of practice. That is, I should say, it wasn't my seat of practice. You see, son, I'm retired now. All my patients are dead.
Dead?
All of them?
Well, it's this way, young folks. I was a family doctor and had my little practice and was like a member of each family that I doctored. I knew all the little troubles and every pain of each of my patients. Never seemed to hanker to add new patients to my clientele, especially as I grew older. More coffee, Miss Carroll?
It does taste good.
Well, as time went on, I found myself laying more and more of my patients to rest in the city of the dead.
But there hasn't been anyone buried in the city of the dead for the last 10 years.
Well, this was years ago, son. Well, finally, about 10 years ago, I discovered that all the families I'd doctored were either dead or had moved away. As I hadn't added any new patients, I was a doctor without a practice.
But couldn't you have got more?
Oh, suppose I could, but I never made a practice of it, so I didn't hanker to begin trying at my age. I was getting well along, and besides, I had enough to live on.
Oh, I see.
Which means that you don't see it all. Well, son, as I said, I lost the last of my patients about the time they closed the City of the Dead as a burying place and opened up a newfangled cemetery over on the other side of the city. My last patient just slipped in under the bars, you might say. Last person to be buried here.
All your patients are buried in this great the city of the dead?
Every one of them. So you can see the city of the dead has a very soft place in my heart. I often come down here and stay a spell with the mayor. It's kind of like being with old friends. Going down there among those little white headstones brings back all the old days to me.
And you just happen to be here on a visit tonight?
Huh? Oh, yeah. Oh, here comes the mayor.
Well, your room's just ready.
Yeah, that's good. I suppose, Miss Carroll, you'd better take the first room. Mr. Parker, you take the one right next to it. Is that right, Mayor?
Don't make no difference.
Well, good night. I hope you both sleep well. I'll call you for breakfast.
Good night, Dr. Tuner. And you too, Mr. Mayor Friday.
Good night, son. And you, Miss Carroll.
Yes. Good night.
Night, Phil. Remember, I'm right next door.
Night, Jim.
And now you, son.
Yeah.
Hi out there. Hey, what do you mean by locking the door? Oh, Phyllis? Phyllis?
Jimmy, is that you?
Yes, Phyllis, they've locked me in and the window's barred.
Out of the night come two youngsters. Into the web of intrigue woven by two strange old characters they fall. Prisoners of Doc Tuner and Mayor Friday. Just who are? But before we go into that, a word from our sponsor. Having locked Jimmy Parker and Phyllis Carroll in adjoining bedrooms in the caretaker's cottage, old Doc Tuner and Mayor Friday are out among the gravestones investigating.
Well, look here, Mayor. We won't be able to find anything down here among the graves this time of night.
Yeah, moon's good. Anyway, I know every stick and stone in the City of the Dead. I'll know if anybody's been prowling around.
But morning will do just as well.
No, it won't. I'm going to look, and if I catch anybody prowling around, well, I got my gun.
But if the men got away, as those youngsters said...
Supposing they ain't telling the truth. All that nonsense about hearing a church bell.
Well, the girl was telling the truth, Mayor. I know the truth when I hear it.
Dang funny. Ain't no church bells within 20 miles of here. I tell you, Doc, I'm just going to raise old Ned if I catch anybody bothering any of my citizens. They come to the City of the Dead to rest, and I'm going to see that they get it.
No, of course, Mayor, but what gets me is why anyone should want to rob a 10-year-old grave and let... By Jove, Mayor.
Huh?
Well, never mind now. This is going to take some thinking over. I'll tell you when we get back to the house. Look yonder at the wisp of fog among the stones.
Yeah, them's the first bits of fog sweeping down the valley. Another couple of hours and the whole city will be so thick you can cut yourself a hunk.
Strange how I love this old place. Those wisps of fog remind me of rays, nice friendly phantoms.
Reckon you have the same feel about this place as me. Listen.
There's your church bell.
But they ain't any bell, I tell you. I seen them take it out of the tower 10 years back when they quit using it.
Yeah, maybe your ears are deceiving you, but personally, I hear church bells.
Yeah, these are fellas that creeps, don't it?
Yeah, it seems to me there are altogether too many mysterious things happening in the City of the Dead, if you get what I mean.
I don't.
Well, for a city of quiet, decent folk that are supposed to be at their last resting place, there's a beastly lot of nocturnal activity.
Listen. Bell stopped.
Say, I got a thought, Mary.
Yeah?
Why don't you put old Lammy Fink to keep a lookout at night? If he saw a prowler...
He'd have a fit. Lammy Fink. That addle brain wouldn't stay in the City of the Dead after dark for anything on earth.
Well, to be honest about it, Mary, it looks to me like the kids are telling the truth. In the morning, we'd better feed them and send them on their way.
And have them go home and tell a long rigmarole about Otto bandits and hysterical men and phantom church bells and us locking them up for the night?
Well, you can't keep them locked up indefinitely. Better turn them loose before any more harm's done.
Mighty funny they should show up right at this time. Looks queer to me. Somebody's been monkeying around in the City of the Dead for the last week. Then we up and catch a couple. Don't seem natural to me that they should be innocent.
Well, then I lied to them about the telephone. That's something else for them to talk about.
Guy's sakes, Doc. If they went to the police with all that, the City of the Dead would be run over with police and thrill hunters for weeks. I ain't gonna have it. What's this? Look here.
Man's cap.
Yes, it's a cap, all right.
Recognize it?
Yes.
You don't say, Mary.
Yes. Belongs to Lammy Fink.
Don't tell much. Might have left it here yesterday while he was working.
No, he didn't. I was by this way after he left last night. Wasn't here then. And anyway, he was working down at the other end of the city. And again, I seen him when he left after work. And he had it on his head then.
Well, those are three pretty definite reasons to make us believe that Lammy Fink isn't so afraid of the City of the Dead after dark as you thought. Likewise, it rather indicates that Lammy was down here tonight.
I know Lammy. He wasn't down here. Not if he could help it, he wasn't.
You're a stubborn fellow, Mayor. You deny their church bells even when you hear them. Now you intimate that a man's cap has arrived on the scene without reason or assistance.
Well, things ain't like they should be, Doc. Something's the matter. Somebody's desecrating the City of the Dead.
Well, the thing to do is to question Lammy tomorrow.
Shh, wait, listen.
Church bell again. Say, I'm beginning to think you're right about investigating that old church. I'll go down with you tomorrow.
I ain't gonna wait till tomorrow. I'm going down there now.
Oh, come now, Mayor. It's getting foggier than the deuce. You won't be able to see anything.
Going anyway. If there's anything there, I'll see it.
Oh, what's the use of chasing phantom church bells this time of night?
Don't come if you don't want to. I'm going.
Well, if you're going, I might as well go, too.
You ain't fidgety at your age, are you, Doc?
Who, me? Blamed old fool. Come on. Can't see a blame thing.
Got a flashlight, Doc. Always carry one.
Dilapidated old ruin. Should have been torn down long ago.
Come on. I'll lead.
And look out where you step. Every board's full of rottenness. Floor's liable to collapse and let you through.
I ought to know that. Been in here often enough.
Hey, what in tunkage there?
Oh, nothing but the rafters creaking. Can't you feel the whole building sway when the wind blows? It's that old.
And your whole shebang's likely to crash down on us.
Don't reckon so. Keep quiet.
What the deuce for? You don't expect to run anything into anything here, do you? Most folks have better sense than to risk their neck in this kind of place.
If a bell rung, somebody rung it.
But you said there wasn't any bell.
Last
time I was in here is when we buried old man Burton. It's more than 10 years back. You remember old man Burton, Mayor?
Yeah,
walked down this very aisle behind his coffin.
Oh, Lord Almighty, Mayor.
Just a screech owl, Doc.
That's the blamedest noise.
Shh, hold it.
I told you we should have waited till morning.
It ain't nothing. Come on.
Where are you going now?
We're going to climb up this here ladder into the belfry.
No, we're not.
I am.
Like as not, one of the rungs will give way and you'll break your neck.
I'm going to chance it.
Yeah, then let me go first.
No. This here's my funeral.
Now, be careful there. Listen to those rungs squeak under your weight.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll hold, I guess. Are you coming?
Yes, of course. Hold that light down here so I can see what I'm doing. All right. Right behind you.
All right, Doc.
You wait for me at the top of the ladder.
Yeah.
If anything doing, I might as well be in on it.
Yeah. All right, Doc.
Yeah, except for a bad case of goose pimples.
Now, I'm going to turn on the flashlight. Better crouch down in case there should be anything.
I'm crouched.
Mm-hmm. Look out! Look out! Huh? What's the matter?
Didn't you see it?
See what?
Whatever made that noise?
Them was pigeons. Scared the pie out of them.
But I saw a shape. Shadows.
Yeah, just a pigeon flying around.
I don't believe it. I saw something big.
Oh. Yeah, where is it then? Couldn't have gone down the ladder. Couldn't have jumped out of the belfry without busting its neck.
Yeah, have your own way. Anyway, there isn't any bell up here.
Exactly like I told you.
So, you see, we had all this monkey business for nothing. You satisfied now?
I heard a bell tonight.
Yeah, of course you did. So did I.
Where did it come from? Ain't no other buildings around for 20 miles.
Yeah, looks to me like you've deepened your mystery rather than solved it.
Yeah. Look. Cobwebs all over the place. Ain't nobody else been up here for years. Anybody could tell that.
Hey, Mayor, let's go back to the house to do our cogitating. I'm not what you'd call comfortable perched up here in this old belfry.
Yeah, reckon we might as well go down.
Yeah. Glad that's over. I'd make a blamed poor monkey at my age.
Come along.
Now, where do you think you're going?
Well, as long as I'm here, might as well look over the whole place.
You're sure anxious to break a leg. You feel how springy these floorboards are? Liable to give away any minute.
We'll take a look behind the altar.
Eh? What's back there?
Well, it used to be the preacher's study. It was never used, though, after the old bell ringer committed suicide in there.
By Jove, Mayor, I'd forgotten about that. Old Sammy Martin hanged himself, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, locked the study off and never used it after that. Of course I remember now. 15 years ago, if it was a day.
It ain't locked no more, don't reckon.
Look here, Mayor, I'm not so certain I like this.
Like what?
Well, we've got a dead bell ringer.
Yeah?
No, we've got a phantom bell. You think there's any connection?
No. You?
I hope not.
Whoever heard of a doctor being scared of ghosts?
I don't recollect saying anything about being frightened. I'm just putting two and two together.
Claire! Where are you? Where's the light? Are you hurt?
No, I'm all right. Just broke through the floor and...
Hurt? Have you got the light?
No. I just skinned my shin. Blast this rotten place.
But the light...
Here it is. I hung on to it.
My soul, what was that?
Come from the study, didn't it?
Yes, sounded so.
Shh. Oh, it's only the rafters. Here, help me pull my leg out of this danged hole.
Wait a minute until I turn on the light.
No, leave it off. You sneak up on the study.
What do you mean, sneak up?
Here, give me your hand.
There you are. Now, look here, Mayor. I've had enough for one night.
I'm going to see what made that noise.
No fat chance of sneaking up on anything after the crash you made when you fell.
We'll sneak up to the door and throw it open.
Yeah, and get shot for our trouble.
No, we won't. Be lying flat on the floor.
Yeah.
Yes. Then we'll wriggle into the room.
Now, listen, I'm no snake.
Then we'll wait until we hear a noise.
You're crazy, Mayor.
Yes, maybe so. Anyway, as soon as we hear a noise, we'll flash on the light and nab whoever's there.
Just as easy as that.
Come on now. Don't make a sound. Here's the door. We lie down flat.
Right in front of the door?
Yes. It swings in. I'm right alongside you.
Who's going to open the door?
I am. I've unlatched it. All I've got to do is give it a push.
Well, push.
What? Ow! Ow! Great jumping seizure. What was that, Doc?
Oh, I don't know, but whatever it ran the full length of me.
Stepped on you?
Stepped on me and dang near ground me into the floor. Stepped smack on my head.
Are you hurt?
Well, I don't feel any too good.
Can you walk?
Oh, of course.
Well, our ghost seems to have gotten away. Turn on the light. Let's get into the room and look around.
Yeah, I could do with some light. There. Mayor, I haven't told you the worst yet.
Huh? The worst?
Yes, the worst. Mayor, whoever it was that ran over me didn't have shoes on. Look where his nails scratched my face.
Oh, gosh almighty, Doc. Wasn't it a man?
I tell you, he was barefooted if it was.
Gee, Rushi. It'd take claws to make scratches like that. Here, tie your face up with this handkerchief. It's bleeding.
Yeah, I hope you're satisfied.
Now, just a minute. I want to look around this study. Give me the flashlight.
No limit to your curiosity.
Shh.
There it is again. Whatever it is, it's hanging about outside.
Look. Look there, Doc. It's a bell rope.
Bell rope?
Yes, see it? That claw-footed man, or whatever it is, has been ringing the bell from in here. Look. Look where it disappears through the ceiling.
It's a new rope. Hey, Mayor, what are you doing?
I'm going to ring that dang bell.
Now, you want to prove to yourself that there is a bell, huh?
Well, of course there's a bell. I always knew there was.
Well, go ahead. Pull it. My face hurts.
I'll give it a yank that will pull the whole contraption down.
Well, pull. Pull.
Yeah, here goes.
Mayor! Mayor! He's shot. It wasn't a bell. It was a trap.
Just heard the opening episode of The City of the Dead, especially written and produced for your sponsor by Carlton E. Morse. What is this clawfoot thing? What is the meaning of the phantom church bell? Why are Jimmy and Phyllis held prisoners? And finally, who shot Mayor Friday? And how and why? The mystery grows deeper and creepier next week with Chapter 2 entitled, I've Dug Up Something Ghastly.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Please. Quiet, please. The American Broadcasting Company presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper, and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please, for today is called If I Should Wake Before I Die. I am a practical man. I want you to understand that I am practical, utterly practical. That I believe nothing that cannot be proved beyond the shadow of a doubt. I know that men live because the lives of many of them impinge on me, who also live. I believe that they die because I've seen them die. Beyond that, there is nothing of life or death that can be proved to my satisfaction. And speculation does not interest me. Whether men die or do not die is a small concern to me. My abiding interest is knowledge, pure knowledge. I've devoted most of my 47 years to its pursuit. The application of the knowledge I gain is a small moment to me. I may say that it's of no moment whatever. The experiment, the deduction and proof of new natural laws is the be-all and the end-all, as I believe the poets put it. And their application is not my province. Don here does not share my opinion. Don's interest is in the applications of the laws that I and others have discovered and proved.
You don't care, Dr. Anderson, whether a million men and women die as the result of the application of your discoveries?
It is a matter of no interest whatever to me, Don.
I wonder if you really mean that.
I mean it. Implicitly.
You know what the world is doing with your discoveries?
Obviously, I know something of what they're doing. But I assure you, it does not interest me.
It doesn't interest you that three men are circling this Earth in a satellite rocket as a result of your research?
I am interested only in the data they may bring back from outer space. Data on which I may base further research.
It doesn't interest you that those data may become the basis for the building of fortresses out there in space, from which the Earth can be bombarded by some of the new weapons that have derived from your studies?
I didn't invent the weapons, Don.
Other men did, using your technical data.
Yeah, that's their concern.
But does it interest you that those three men may never come back to Earth? That they may be facing a horrible death out there, 700 miles away from this Earth, alone out there in the dark?
I have no time to contemplate their troubles, Don.
You sent them there?
I did not.
They wouldn't be there if it hadn't been for your formulas and your work.
I tell you again, that is their concern, not mine.
Do you know who they are?
Don, I'm very busy. Would you please go back to your office and let me finish my work?
Ernst Macy and Dan Seymour.
Please go away.
And your brother.
My brother.
Your kid brother, Edward.
Will you hand me that slide rule, please?
Will you listen to me?
The other one, please.
Dr. Anderson, I tell you that... I'll answer. Yes. Oh, this is Don, Major. When? You sure? Yes, he's here. No, I don't think so. I'll tell him. Dr. Anderson. Well, that was Major Hilton over at the center. They had another message from the satellite rocket at 1455. From your brother, Edward.
What did you say?
From 700 miles out in space. From a rocket that's been circling the Earth for 3 months now, alone out there in the cold void, such a little hope of ever coming back to warmth and light and friends from the dark and the cold.
What are you talking about?
Your brother Edward. He's dead. Somewhere out there in space, he's dead. Do you hear me? He sent you a message. He died before he finished it. Tell my brother, he said. Tell my brother if I should wake before I die. And he died before he finished it. Do you know what that means? Do you hear me? Your brother!
Just hand me that notebook there, will you? No, the one with the brown cover. Yeah, thanks. Knowledge is all. The application of the knowledge is unimportant, unless it leads to further knowledge. I have no theories of life or death or of creation. Explanation or the attempted explanation is futile and unnecessary. There are no secrets of life or death. They're chemical processes peculiar to man. They exist, and that's all. Perhaps someday I or one of my colleagues will discover the principles of this living and dying. But there's a long, long apprenticeship ahead of us before we can turn to that phase of science. Then, in the meantime, there are problems to be solved, answers to be proved. And it's of no importance what temporary use is made of the results of our researches. The space rocket would have been useful, no doubt, in charting the effects of cosmic radiation. But it's gone. We must dismiss it as an expedient that failed. Knowledge. Knowledge is the goal. All else is unimportant. Never forget that. It's worth any price.
Doesn't it depend just a little, Dr. Anderson, on who pays the price?
What?
The ones who die in the search?
Well, as long as the important ones don't die, the price is reasonable.
Who is to decide which are the unimportant ones?
I am important.
Yes, to yourself.
To the world.
The others are important to the world, too.
Nonsense.
There wouldn't be any world without them, Doctor.
Well, in that sense...
People like your brother.
He was dispensable to science.
To you, personally?
Are you implying that I didn't love my brother?
Am I?
I did.
I wonder.
Now, please don't try to involve me in an emotional experience, Don. I have work to do.
It might do you some good, Dr. Anderson, if you did get involved in an emotional experience. It might wake you up.
I'm awake, thank you.
No, you're not.
Kindly explain what you mean by that.
No. I don't think I will, Doctor. I don't think I will.
Well, I don't know what you mean.
You know what you're doing.
I do.
You know that the application of your research and experiment is producing the most frightful weapons the world has ever seen.
That's not my fault. That's application again.
Well, they wouldn't exist without what you know, what you've proved.
In that case, I am only helping my country.
That's what the others say.
What others?
The other scientists in other countries. They're helping their countries, too.
Well, that's their privilege.
You realize that you and the others are distilling destruction for the whole world, don't you?
That's the fault of you young military men who are converting pure research into weapons for war.
I grant that. But you are the ones that gave us that research. It's your dreams, not ours.
I wish you'd stop talking of dreams.
Well, I wish...
You wish what?
I remember what your brother sent to you from way out there in space. Dying in a rocket ship. A spaceship that grew out of your dreams.
Yeah, I've forgotten it.
Why, Dr. Anderson, you must remember it.
No.
It's like that little prayer that kids say at bedtime. Only your brother changed it around a little. He knew what he was talking about. You remember it?
Something sentimental. I remember I used to say it when we were children at night. I know it. Now I lay me down to sleep. If I should die before I wake...
That isn't what your brother said. Dying out there in the cold and the dark.
Why don't...
I'd try to remember it if I were you, Doctor. Your brother said, if I should wake before I die...
It doesn't make sense.
Oh, yes, it does, Doctor. He was telling you to wake up before you die. Wake up, Doctor, before you die and the world dies with you.
There is nothing I can do. I have committed myself to this and I've gone too far. The others, Barshoff and Beveridge and Delaplaine, they have gone too far, too. We cannot stop. It's no dream, no dream at all. It is pure science. What if they have perverted our dreams? Not dreams. What if they have perverted our studies, our equations, our living thoughts to weapons of destruction? It was not our fault. I was not my brother's keeper.
But he died far, far out there in the illimitable reaches of immeasurable cold. Out where the cosmic dust lies in great cold clouds. There is no time.
The alchemists tried for thousands of years to transmute base metals into precious ones. I only carried out their fumbling task.
But you succeeded, you and the others.
I didn't pollute the waters of Bikini.
No. You sat in a snug office 8,000 miles away. And the reports of the awful upheaval of the sea came to you. And you read them and smiled. You leaned back in your chair and smiled. They've proved what we knew could be proved, you said. And you smiled.
It was not my fault.
You dreamed that destruction leaked from the floor of the sea and the waters were charged with death, and you smiled in your dream.
It was no dream.
And your brother and two other men shook hands with you and stepped into the rocket shell that was to be their tomb, and that tomb was the reality of your dream.
No.
And you dream now of more wonders upon the earth, upon this earth that one day you will destroy, you with your own hands.
No, I say...
Your dream grows brighter and greater until the whole universe is blotted out, and you stretch out your hands for reality... And there's only black.
Attention, please. Attention, please. In 30 seconds, Project Phaeton will be activated. In 30 seconds, Project Phaeton will be activated. 30 seconds.
Wait. I tell you that... No, not now. Come over here to the window.
No,
you
I
must.
28
Bring
seconds.
Bring your... No, take those binoculars from the desk.
Seconds.
Quick, come on.
Is this the end, then?
This is Project Phaeton.
What
is it? Over here. Where you can see the moon.
4 seconds.
Hurry.
23 seconds.
Well, what is
22
it?
22 seconds.
We're going to reach the moon.
21 seconds.
What?
20
Here.
Seconds.
Watch the radar.
19 seconds.
No, the binoculars won't do you any good.
17 seconds.
Here.
17
Watch.
Seconds.
This is the project I heard about him. Where did you hear about
seconds.
It? There's been talk.
14
yeah, I'll
seconds.
Hit somebody's head for that.
13
Watch.
Seconds.
Watch. Is
seconds.
It just another radar contact?
Seven
We're
seconds.
Going to reach it. We kept it a secret for so long.
Seconds.
Only 10 seconds.
Nine
what
seconds.
Are you going to do? The beam is on
Eight
it. What are you
seconds.
Going to do? Going to reach the moon
Seven
with a projectile.
Seconds.
Atomic fission projectile.
6 seconds.
Watch.
5 seconds.
Watch. Oh,
Four
Dr. Anderson.
Seconds.
No.
3 seconds. 2 seconds.
If we do this...
1 second...
Time. I didn't hear it. Wait. Look! I pray the Lord, my soul to thank.
One does not always accurately foresee the results of a projected experiment. Yeah, that, however, is the purpose of experiments, to prove or disprove a theory, a scientific conception. If it were possible to conduct all one's experiments personally, the margin of error would naturally be reduced to the minimum. But when a large number of other individuals enter into the operation, error and the possibility of error is naturally multiplied. Now, that's an interesting thought. I must make a note of it. In what ratio does probable error increase with the addition of new minds to a particular project? I must deduce a formula. At the moment, I do not know exactly what went wrong. It's within the realm of possibility that I might have made a slight miscalculation myself. Although, naturally, I doubt that. It's possible that fissionable material reacts with greater celerity where atmosphere, as we know it, is lacking. It is possible that there were on the moon certain elements unknown to us, elements that do not show up in spectrometric analyses, elements particularly amenable to chain reaction of unprecedented violence. It's mildly shocking to realize the extent of the damage done by Project Phaeton. However, I'm reminded of the theory of the philosopher Berkeley that one must doubt everything outside the circle of one's own consciousness. Certainly, I have the evidence of my own consciousness. The image of the moon instantaneously disappeared on the radar screen at the precise second when my calculations showed that the projectile had reached the moon's surface. And although this is the time of the full moon, for 3 nights now in succession, the It has not appeared in its customary place in the firmament. Therefore, I am led to an ineluctable conclusion, which is corroborated by other hearsay evidence. It is a fact, and I state it positively, that the moon has been utterly destroyed as a result of Project Phaeton. Never again the sweet moonlight for the lovers. Never more the harvest moon rising above the hills on an October night. But science is vindicated. Science has done it. Pure science went into the calculations, the great thinking machines ground and chattered, and the data poured out. The data that I alone knew would come. Equations no human mind could imagine. Beautiful, pure mathematical thoughts far beyond the conception.
Far beyond the conception of the ones who die.
Calculations of mass and energy and the cosmic movements of all the planets. Allowances for the gravitation of stars 40 light years away. Corrections for the rotation of the Earth. The absolute cold of 240,000 miles of space. Pinpointed on the great crater of Copernicus.
That man has gazed on and pondered since the world began, and that no man shall ever see again.
The hand of man has reached out into space and found a target. Pure, pure thought that sought out the farthest reaches of a mind, the device, the weapon.
And in every harbor of the world, the tides rushed out, and the very floor of the sea was plain to human eyes for one last. And far out on the breast of the ocean, great tidal waves that overtook and destroyed everything that floated.
Man has at last conquered space.
And thousands dead for miles inland from the shore when the waters returned. And the moon...
I did not know we would destroy the moon, I tell you. I thought there would be a small explosion that we could see.
And man has destroyed what God hath wrought. You've dreamed well. Doctor, my scientist, brother.
It was an experiment.
And well done. Well completed.
Bribed for the price of progress.
So they are, so they are.
There will be no more wars, Don. Don't you understand that? We have proved that modern war is so destructive that no nation can afford to fight them. That's no dream.
Yes, yes, you have proved that. You have destroyed one world. A very pretty demonstration.
It was no world. It was the moon, the dead moon.
Dead, yes. Gone, yes. But perhaps it was a world, Dr. Anderson.
Nonsense.
Vegetation on the moon, you knew that. Radar proved it long ago. Way back in 1948.
Well...
Why could there not have been people?
It couldn't be proved.
It will never be proved now. There's only dust. And our own world. Can you think of what has happened on our own world? And look any man in the eye.
I didn't intend that.
But you accomplished it.
I know it, but...
You have other experiments in mind, I assume?
Well, not immediately, of course.
Of course.
And not for years.
Of course not.
We have to go on.
Do you? You know the end of it all.
We can't stop now. We started this thing and... There's no turning back.
The point of no return.
Exactly. We have accomplished a thing that human minds could never imagine.
You have dreamed, and you'll go on dreaming of destruction.
Oh, no. We'll take care next time.
You will.
Of course we will. This is an unfortunate accident.
An accident? 10 million people killed on this continent alone. Cities destroyed that can never be rebuilt. The very moon... The ageless satellite of the Earth, blown to dust. Haven't you dreamed enough?
It is not a dream.
You will not wake before you die, before we die.
What can I do?
You can stop it.
Don, it can't be stopped.
It must be stopped. Man wasn't put on Earth to die by his own hand, to be murdered by his fellow men.
But what can I do?
Stop!
We can't stop. We've started a chain reaction among peoples. You know what chain reactions are. You know what follows. You know that a simple fuse lit by a tiny match can set off an explosion.
That will destroy the world.
There's nothing to be done.
Nothing?
Boshoff and Beveridge and Delaplaine and I feel in all humility, we know all there is to know about these cosmic forces. We know more than any other four men in the world. We
do you four know how to stop this progress?
I know. I think they know.
But you won't stop?
How?
Well, if you four could agree to put aside all this...
We can't. There is no hope.
We must go on to destruction?
We must go on.
How do you know you must go on?
I know.
How do you know?
I have been told.
By the others?
Yes.
They'll go on if you give up?
They will. I know.
What if they died?
They are the directing brains of all the research in their countries.
And?
If they died, their programs will be set back so far... They won't die.
They have died.
What did you say?
I said they have died. It's impossible. They did.
How do you know they died? When?
They died on a ship in the Atlantic Ocean.
When?
When everybody else died on the Atlantic Ocean.
In the tidal wave?
Yes. You disposed of them very neatly.
Why didn't
you kill them just as you killed all those others?
They're dead.
It's my business to know about that, Dr. Anderson.
Marshall. And Beveridge. Delaplaine.
You have no rivals now, Dr. Anderson.
Why, that's right. We're in front of the world.
What's left of it?
There's nobody to carry on their work.
Are you sure?
I know. But now...
Yes, now.
What were they coming here for?
I didn't say they were coming here.
They were, though. I know they were. But what... Why were they coming here?
Don't you know, Dr. Anderson?
To kill me. To murder me. Why, of course, they knew me. They heard about Project Beta. They knew if they murdered me, that would stop all our developments here. And they would ally themselves against us, and without the weapons that I could devise, they would... Why, they'd win the war.
What war, Dr. Anderson?
What war? Why, they'd declare war on us. No, they wouldn't declare war on us. They'd just destroy us overnight.
No.
What?
No. They weren't coming here to kill you.
I know they were.
No.
What then?
They were coming here to make a deal with you.
A deal?
Yes. They were afraid.
Of what?
Of the thing that killed them.
Tidal wave.
But that, they didn't know what it was to be, but they... Well, maybe they were afraid of it. Afraid of what you'd do next.
Well, they'd better be afraid.
Oh, they're not anymore. They're dead.
Oh, yes, that's right. Well,
remember what your brother said?
Yes, I remember. But what?
Why, they awoke before they died, Dr. Anderson.
It didn't do them any good.
No, it didn't, did it?
Oh, it certainly didn't.
Because you didn't awake. Now you're the only one left. You know all the secrets. You know more than any other man in the whole world.
I do. Don't I?
It's in your power now to go ahead and do things that the others can't duplicate, that they can't even come near.
It's my patriotic duty.
Is it?
I've got to. Why, Don, if I could tell you some of the things I've already planned, some of the most amazing things, what? I tell you, your mind couldn't even begin to comprehend what I can do.
And not worry about competition.
That's right.
But... There may not be any place left for you to do these wonderful things, Doctor.
Why not?
Why, there might not be any world left, don't you see?
But I can't just sit here.
No, of course not.
I can't stagnate.
I agree.
Well, I've spent my whole life studying, learning, thinking and studying again. I've gone farther into nuclear fission than any other man in history. I know more than even they knew. Do you mean that I should give this all up and just...
sit here?
Not at all, Doctor. Listen to me. I'll show you. There's one little thing. One simple little operation. One... Why, it's as simple as turning a switch the wrong way.
Yes?
It would neutralize every single atom of fissionable material in the world today.
Really?
I mean it. It would neutralize every stockpile in the world, and it would be 100 years before anybody could repair even one little bomb. Do you realize that?
There's only one catch in it.
What?
You. If you were still around, you and only you in all the world could, well, shall I say, unneutralize it.
That's right.
Yes.
And you want me to give it all up?
Yes.
I can't do it, Don. I've explained that to you. There's nobody left to carry on but me.
Nobody but you. That's right. Dr. Anderson, do you want to die?
What?
I say, do you want to die?
Die? Why, I've never particularly thought about dying, Don. Do you know that?
Not personally, you mean.
Yeah, that's right. It's curious.
But you don't mind bringing death to a great many other people, do you? Do you?
I...
To our brother Edward.
I didn't.
I'm your brother too, Sam. I'll die too, and everybody else will die, and you'll die by your hand if you don't give it up.
I'll die. But I can't do it, I tell you.
You're still dreaming, Sam.
I tell you, I'm not dreaming.
It isn't too late to wake up, Sam.
I'm not dreaming.
Yes, you are, Sam, and it's time to wake up.
I tell you. The title of today's Quiet Please story is If I Should Wake Before I Die. Written and directed by Willis Cooper, the man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell. And My Brother Don was played by Don Briggs. As usual, music for Quiet Please is played by Albert Berman. Now, for a word about next week, if you can get through the door, here is our writer-producer, Willis Cooper.
Thank you for listening to Quiet Please. Next week, I have a story for you about the man who knew everything.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell. ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
If you're enjoying this episode, please don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and to share the podcast.
To get my act together. Comedy, of course. The jokes are a scream. For instance, how does a vampire travel to Europe? By blood vessel. Or where did Frankenstein go when the wolfman bit off his hand? To the second hand store. No. Well, that's a real good on her, huh? Why did the mortician move to Australia? Because he heard everybody was down under. Start laughing or you'll be permanently laid back. What did the urn say to the coffin? Give up? I ain't got no body. Anyway, if I can't make it in showbiz, I'll work with my brother-in-law. He has a chain of drive-in taco stands and mortuaries called eat and weep. They're so convenient to the cemetery. But enough. We have to get on with the show. Welcome back, friends. Tonight's story is a classic tale about a husband, a wife, and... But you'll see, as we open the coffin on the first act of Can't You Do Anything Right?
More coffee?
No, thanks. I'm fine.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, here we go.
I can't get over what you've done with this room, Edie. No wonder. The wallpaper cost me a fortune.
10, 11...
Oh, count to yourself. But only a fraction of you had to use a decorator.
Decorator? You must be joking. I saved a third on the wallpapers, 20% on the carpeting. There's only one way. Do it yourself.
I couldn't hang flypaper.
That's for sure. Can you imagine George trying to install carpeting around a ladder?
Don't be cruel. I have other qualities.
Oh, we know, dear. It's your sunny disposition and boyish charm that make up for them.
Well, it's easy. Even Philip can install bathroom tiles. Isn't that right, dear?
Yes. Lots of fun.
Secretly, you enjoy it.
Especially during the football game. My bid. Pass.
A spade.
Two hearts.
One, no trump.
The bid is two hearts.
Oops. Two spades. Sorry, partner. Pass.
Two, no.
Uh-huh. Leave me hanging, huh?
Can't be helped.
Pass.
Three spades. I mean, four spades.
Philip, make up your mind.
I said four spades.
Pass.
Pass?
Pass.
My lead. How's that, partner?
Brilliant. We've set them five.
Put the cards down, Philip. You're the dummy.
Bye. Thank you.
I'll call you tomorrow. Nope, can't. I'll have my upholstering class all morning.
You never. Give me a bus.
See you later, Phil. And stay off high ladders.
Oh, please, say the jokes. Come on.
What did I say?
Say goodnight, George.
Goodnight, George.
Thanks again. We had a wonderful time.
Bye-bye.
Goodnight. You don't have to clean up. I'll take care of everything, as usual.
Where do you get off embarrassing me in front of company?
Oh, please, I'm tired. Not now.
Oh, sure.
Just bring the cops into the kitchen.
Into the kitchen?
Your bidding was terrible during last rubber. Why on God's earth did you double three diamonds?
Just to annoy you.
Oh, that's clever.
And another thing, don't run down my friends. There was no reason to snap at George, none at all.
I don't like my husband compared to a one-armed paper hanger.
He was kidding.
Listen, Philip.
No, you listen. I won't do everything. I can't work at the company like a horse and be expected to come home and saw two-by-fours or paper the dining room or staple fabric to walls.
You could try.
And this damn game room. I want you to get someone else, a carpenter or a workman, to put up the paneling. You understand?
Oh, forget it. It's a waste of money. I'd rather spend it on a better grade of carpeting. You can put up the panels. I've figured everything out.
Yeah, Edie, I am tired of spending my evenings and weekends decorating this house.
And I'm tired of living like this. We need... No. I need to function in pleasant surroundings.
But must we redo the entire house at once?
I hardly think 6 months is... Oh, Philip, my home is very important to me.
Well, then hire somebody to do the donkey work. We can afford it.
It's money tossed out the window.
We always have to do it your way, huh?
That's the big deal. It's a small house. The papering was easy, wasn't it?
We almost came to blows.
The pattern was off almost an inch.
That's the point. I'm doing something two, three times, and you stand back inspecting the work like a field marshal. Edie, get a carpenter for the paneling.
The hell I will. You can do it. If you want to. I don't care what's on your truck or how many stops you've got to make.
Oh, lady, please.
Please. I want exactly what I ordered. enough. That's second-grade material. I'm calling your company.
Hey, it ain't my fault. I only drive.
That's apparent. I want to speak with Mr. Stewart. Edith Harmon. I don't care if he's with Cheryl Pigs. Get him on the phone now.
Oh, boy.
Get up. I'll take your filthy clothes off my couch.
Sorry.
Mr. Stewart, because of your bungling, I almost had second-grade paneling dumped in my house. No, they are not mahogany. They are simulated tacon. Yes, talk to this driver. Here, you.
Hello? Hey, I didn't load the truck. Okay. Yeah. It was a mistake. I'm going back to the yard and get your panels, okay?
Well, based upon their current earnings, I feel that the stock is worth, on the low side, 70.
70?
Mm-hmm.
It's never traded above 43.
Your wife's on the phone, Mr. Harmon.
Tell her I'm in conference.
Yes, sir.
All right. The fund will take a position. We'll purchase 100,000 shares in blocks of 10,000.
I know. Over a period of 3 weeks.
Sir.
Hmm? What is it now?
Mrs. Harmon says she must speak to you.
Go ahead, Phil. She probably needs you to hang some more wallpaper.
Oh, funny. Hello?
Hi. How's the Wizard of Wall Street?
In conference. What is it, Edie?
The new paneling arrived.
Hmm, how nice.
Phil, oh, it's so elegant. You won't have to lift a finger. I'm going to do everything myself.
Well, you can't drive those nails.
Nails? I'm going to glue them to the side.
What?
I bought them at Turnabon. Oh, it dries in seconds and holds immediately.
Glue won't work.
It does. I put up three panels already, and we can finish the job over the weekend.
No, move it to the left. It's still overlapping.
How's that?
Oh, no good. Take it off and position it again.
Hey, relax. I'm trying to help.
Put it down.
Don't shout.
Okay. More to the left. That's it. Now push. On the bottom, stupid. Can't you follow the simplest instructions?
The damn panel should be nailed to the studs, not glued.
It was easier when I did it alone.
Then do the rest of this miserable job yourself.
Oh, I don't know how I married such an incompetent.
Did you say something?
Flip it. Go watch football or play with your stock.
Why don't you shut up?
Bye, Phil.
I never heard of anybody using glue to attach paneling.
Bye, Phil. I'll finish the game room myself.
Get off my back and you'll get your job done.
Oh, no. I'm tired of your sloppy work and bungling.
Well, I'm not a professional carpenter.
Or a very good stockbroker either.
What the hell does that mean?
Let's not get into it, huh?
I don't make enough money, is that it?
Frankly, no. If you did, I wouldn't have to build my own game room or paper the hall or paint the bedroom.
You witch. You little witch. We can afford anything. Don't you lay this on me.
Get out of here, Phil. I've got work to do. You're useless.
Shut up.
Out.
Shut up.
Keep away from me. No. Phil. Oh, you're hurting me. Oh, I can't breathe. Phil, don't.
That's my idea of a rec room. Stay tuned, won't you?
Hello, I'm Julie Harris, your host on Masterpiece Radio Theater, inviting you to join us for The Tenant of Wildfell Hall, a radio adaptation of the novel by Emily Robinson. We shall listen as a quiet Yorkshire village gossips and speculates as to the identity of the new and mysterious tenant of Wildfell Hall. And Gilbert Markham, our hero and narrator, finds himself more and more attracted to the reclusive neighbor without even really knowing who she is.
Would you be very glad to find you were mistaken in your conclusions?
How can you ask it, Helen?
I don't say I can clear myself altogether, but would you be glad to discover I was better than you think?
Anything that could in the least degree restore my opinion of you would be only too gladly received.
Masterpiece Radio Theater stars
Monday evenings at 5 and Sunday evenings at 9 on KCSN, Northridge.
You're listening to KCSN, Northridge, 88.5 FM.
Now, where were we? Ah, yes. Phil and Edie are in the game room. However, poor Edith, she's losing, isn't she? I'll go to a hotel.
Absolutely not. We've got plenty of room.
I want to go home.
I know, but let things cool off, huh?
Okay. Okay. Honestly, I didn't want to hurt her. It just got out of hand. I've never felt like that. It was like a wild animal. What did I do? Did you ever hit Betty?
We got into a business once. Over something. I don't even remember it. Probably something stupid. I slapped her. She slapped me back. It happened so fast.
And
we both started crying. That was a scene. Crying and holding each other. Strange. One instant hate, the next love.
I wish it was so simple.
Phil, in a couple of days, it'll be ancient history.
I don't think so. Edie isn't quick to forgive. Or forget.
Ridiculous. She'll bury her sorrows in paneling or making drapes. Believe me.
The lady with 1,000 projects.
That's for sure. However, she's damn talented.
Yeah, and very picky. Too picky, George. I must have moved those panels a dozen times just to get the right pattern fit. The mismatch was so slight that, well, only Edie would have noticed it.
Imperfection?
You bet. And to boot, she's gluing them to the studs with this Eternabond. Dries in seconds.
Oh, boy. Now, don't get yourself worked up. Listen, Betty will give her a call. She can handle Edie.
George. George, how did you feel when you hit Betty?
Terrible.
No, I didn't. I felt different. As if I wasn't choking her. Like I was watching the whole thing. I was a spectator. And George, I was smiling. I was happy.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, I thought... Well, I suppose you heard.
Yes. Phil's going to stay with us.
That figures.
Edie, please.
He tried to kill me.
It was a mistake.
Oh, no, it wasn't. All of a sudden, he blew up. Started screaming. The next thing I knew, he was choking me.
He lost his temper.
I'll say.
Perhaps something else was bothering him. Phil isn't the violent type.
Really? If a little thing like putting up panels can trigger an outburst, I can imagine. Well, anyhow, I don't want him near me or this house.
You're making a production out of this. Why don't I come over?
For what purpose?
We can talk, and I can get some of Phil's clothes.
All right. But I don't want him in this house.
That's carrying it too far.
Oh? When his thumbs dug into my neck and pressed and pressed, Phil was smiling. He knew what he was doing and enjoyed every moment of it. Every moment.
Take it easy, huh?
Why is she doing this?
Phil, she's scared and angry. Listen, if you were being...
I didn't mean it. You believe that?
Yes. Yes.
Why doesn't she get off the phone?
Because it's probably off the hook.
I can't stay here any longer. I want to go home and work this out.
Phil, don't push it. Let time heal the matter. Listen, we'll go up to Lake Arrowhead for the weekend.
No.
Hey, hold it. Hold it.
I'm sorry.
I understand. It's okay.
I can't control my temper anymore.
Yeah, sure. Give it another day. We'll work something out, all right?
Sure, George.
Sure.
You wouldn't be here until 2.
I couldn't wait.
Just a second. Hi.
Hi.
Want to come in?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I have the rest of your things.
Oh, Edie.
Oh, please. This is difficult for me, too.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Well, how's the game room coming?
Great. Almost finished the paneling.
Oh. The glue really holds.
Like iron. Want to see?
I'd love to.
Not bad, huh?
Looks great.
When I get the carpeting down, it'll be a smash.
Oh, Edie, please. Please, no, let's not do this. I love you. I want to come home.
No. It's impossible.
I'll do anything. Anything. It was a mistake. Don't you understand? A mistake.
I can't tolerate mistakes.
Please.
Stop begging. You disgust me, Phil. Stop sniveling.
Sorry.
Let's get your clothes.
I don't want to leave. This is my home, too.
Oh, I knew this was going to happen. Get out of here. Now.
No. No.
I'll call the police. Philip, get out of my home.
It's mine, too.
Yours. Oh. I've done all the work. Painting, papering. You haven't done a damn thing.
I have. I've tried.
Try. You have to be watched like a hawk. You're incompetent. You botch every job, even the smallest task.
It's not true.
It is. I won't let you mess up my home anymore. Get out.
I'm not incompetent.
Please, let's not go into it.
You're right. Let's not.
They even recognize your inadequacy at work. Passed over twice for branch manager.
Don't start.
People know. They see how inept you are. A timid little man, afraid of his own shadow.
Knock it off.
And here, in my home, oh, Lord, you're nothing. A bungler, incompetent with a hammer, and inadequate in a bedroom.
Shut up.
It's the truth. You're a wimp.
Keep your filthy mouth shut.
Get out, Phil.
Never. Incompetent, huh? Inadequate, huh? Show you. Let's see if this glue can keep your mouth shut. Or fasten you to the floor. I'll put some Eternabond on this hand.
Oh, no. No, don't.
Yeah, yeah. And some on this hand. Pin them down. Now, how long will it take to dry?
Please.
6 seconds? A minute? Well, I'll just hold them until you can't move. Huh? Well, you like this king room so much, you can stay here. Permanently. But I'll be damned. It works.
Phil, oh, please, get me loose. I'm stuck.
Apparently.
Please, help me.
No way. Now, how about a little glue to seal that big mouth of yours? Huh? Yeah, a little more on this lip. Right? Yeah. That's, oh, that's better, yes. Well, that's much better. Well, don't you look stupid. Glue to the floor. My. How unprofessional. Oh, yes. Well, I'm going to leave you here. I wonder how long it'll take for you to starve to death. Hmm? Well, I'd better get my clothes. That's what you wanted, isn't it, dear? Well, see you in a couple of weeks. I know you won't want to be disturbed while you're working, so I'll take the phone off the hook. Enjoy yourself. It's your house, and you're stuck with it.
This is crazy. Why move to a hotel?
I'm imposing on you.
You are.
Well, how long can I stay? A week is plenty. No, too much.
Suit yourself. If Edie calls us, what should I say?
Called? Well, her phone's been off the hook since I got my clothes. She doesn't want to talk to anybody. Especially me.
What? I can't hear you. Who? Phil, I think it's for you.
Hello?
Phil?
Who is this?
Can't you do anything right?
I guess he couldn't. Now it's Phil's turn to come unglued. What fun. Next on Darkness.
That thing, it wanted to touch me. Don't carry on. He's harmless. Bruce, turn on the lights.
Right. They don't work. I don't like this.
I want to go home.
Let's go to the car.
It's stuck. Won't budge.
Hello?
Girlie?
About a family who find themselves in an isolated motel. It's a darkness drama by Ken Jarrett called Weekend Vacation. Don't miss it.
Can't You Do Anything Right? Was written and directed by Ken Jarrett. Featured in the cast were Wendy Allen, Joey Diaria, Greg Snegoff, and Barbara Kerr. Also heard were Michael Immel, Sandra Kenworthy, and Bob Farley. Sound patterns by David Surtees. Darkness is a Roger Rittner, Ken Jarrett radio production. Now, until next time, this is your host, Claude, wishing you good night forever.
Look. There's nothing on the other side of it. We've made it. We're at the top.
But we can't be there. The dad of the Dolan lift, he didn't say anything about a rock peak. He said the top was a plateau, a snowfield where the glacier started.
Come over here. Look. There's the snowfield down there.
You mean...
He never really reached the top. It's a double peak, and he never even saw this spur. We're the first to climb Lachine.
But if that's true, if he lied about it... And something just occurred to you. Testiness.
Yeah. He could be Dorlan. His body was never found, and with his face gone, no one would recognize him. He got the job here at the weather station. And has been living here to protect his people.
And he killed my father. And he's been getting up here in his place. Sam, what are we going to do about him?
Our first job is going to be to get down. The last leg, darling. Here's the west wall. I'll just make this rope fast.
Great Scott.
Death. Look there.
A man. Frozen in the ice.
Look at that beard. Skins he's wet. The stone-tipped spear in his hand. There's the god whom the natives tell legends about. A prehistoric hunter that was frozen in the glacier 100,000 years ago.
Van, if we can get him out, get him back to civilization.
We will. We'll come up here tomorrow with Ferguson. And I'll start down the rope. Wait for me on that ledge just below there.
Yes, sir.
All right. Come on down.
Coming. Stand clear.
Ben, this isn't a ledge. It's the mouth of a cave. And back there, look. Metal cylinder.
Liquid air. So that's it. That's how Scotty died.
I don't understand you.
Your father brought them up here to freeze and preserve anything he might find in the glacier. Like that hunter. When Scotty climbed up here yesterday, Dorlan sprayed the stuff on him. He was dead, frozen solid before he hit the ground.
Fast.
Let's get out of here fast. Go on, down the road.
Yes, Van, but you come through. It'll hold us both.
All right, come on. Easy. The rope's swaying badly. It seems to be slipping.
You're not slipping. I'm untying it.
Van is testing us. He's up on top of the cliff.
Dorlan! Dorlan, don't stop!
Oh, you know who I am, eh? And you probably guessed from that I lied. That I didn't go to the top. And I killed Blair and Scotty to keep them from discovering it. Just as I'm going to kill you.
Dorlan, for heaven's sake!
It's my mountain. Mine. While I live, the world will go on thinking that I was the only one that ever climbed it. Cut this last one knot, and you'll die. One
sound,
what's that?
An avalanche. It's shouting like that started it.
Oh.
It's going
up. Oh.
It's coming down the snowfield. Hold tight and pray that it clears us.
And then the overhang saved us. It went up past us. Van, what happened to Dorlan?
Swept him over the edge. He's down there under 1,000,000 tons of ice. But there on that ledge. Look.
A stone-tipped spear. The one the hunter frozen in the glacier had in his hand.
The avalanche must have carried him down, too. The Chinos has finally come down from the mountain. He had to wait there, frozen in the ice, for 100,000 years. But he finally got his quarry, Dorlan. And
That was the tale of the hunter from beyond. The hunter from before time and history. Of course, you've heard other stories where it took a long time to bring a criminal to justice, but have you ever heard one before where someone waited 100,000 years to get their man? Patience may be a virtue in some things, Raymond, but certainly it's not.
Thank you again for listening, and please don't forget to follow, review, rate, and share.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.